is the Veterans Corner.
Okay, 30 seconds to countdown.
Good luck.
Watch and be like, now can you do that all over again?
How do I sound now? Not good? This is a milestone event. We are excited to be here. Okay, we do a countdown. 3, 2, 1, and run.
That you can count the stars on that flag, you can thank a teacher. That you have that flag as a flag of your country, you can thank a veteran. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Veterans Corner, the show dedicated to veterans, for veterans, and about veterans. My name is Don Busney, and I'm your host for today's program. And today, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special guest. We are particularly honored to welcome a most distinguished New Yorker to our program today. He is calling in from Helmand Province in Afghanistan, so we don't want to keep him waiting. Major General John A. Tulin, United States Marine Corps, is the commanding general of the 2nd Marine Division and 30,000 United States Marines deployed to Afghanistan. He was born in Brooklyn, graduated from Xavier High School and Fordham University. Upon graduation from Fordham, he was commissioned a second lieutenant and started his Marine Corps career as an infantry officer with the 9th Marines in Okinawa, Japan. After a succession of progressively more challenging assignments, during which he distinguished himself, in March of 2003, General Tulin was selected to command Marine Regimental Combat Team 1, the Marine unit that secured Baghdad. Now, Baghdad and his other accomplishments notwithstanding, I'm sure the general would agree that his most sterling accomplishment occurred at Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego, where he met and married his bride, Helen Bajent of El Paso, Texas. The Tulins had a son and two daughters. Son Sean, who is now Captain Sean Tulin, United States Marine Corps, and daughters Carol Lee and Beth. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Major General John A. Tulin. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. Sir, first I have to ask you, what is the temperature there in Afghanistan?
It's just a mild 113 right now.
It's a mild 113. And I can't tell you how honored...
Dry heat.
Well, okay. I can't tell you how honored we are to have you on the Veterans Corner. And we've worked up a few questions here, sir, which I'd like to go through with you. You led the Marine Regimental Combat Team that secured Baghdad in 2003. And then you redeployed. And for your civilians out there, that means he returned to Anbar Province in Iraq. And now Helmand Province in Afghanistan. That is quite a sojourn. But, sir, how do you define success in Regional Command Southwest, which is, I think, the official name of where you are today? How do you define success?
Well, that's correct. Regional Command Southwest, as many know, it's a NATO command, and so it's a coalition force of about 32,000 Marines and British soldiers, Estonians, Georgians, and so that all put together is about 32,000 folks. And we are spread out throughout the Helmand province, which has been, over the past couple of years, the haven for what's called the Pashto Afghans, which are really at the heart of the insurgency here. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to assist the Afghan National Security Forces in standing up a police force and a military, along with Border Patrol and Highway Patrol, and trying to work very closely with those security forces here in Helmand to bring security to the populated areas throughout Helmand Province. We think that as time goes, the Afghans are becoming much more confident in being able to stand up against the Taliban, and that through the training that we're giving them, their confidence in the equipment they're getting as well as the training is just growing. So success is when that Afghan police officer is willing to stand up against a Taliban who may be intimidating some local nationals, and he can dissuade that person from conducting that kind of activity.
That is amazing, sir. Let me ask you the next question. What has been your greatest challenge in Afghanistan?
There are many, as you can imagine, in regards to the challenges. Here in Helmand Province, it's a vast area that really, you know, you could have 100,000 troops and you probably couldn't cover all the areas that is required in this province. And so sometimes it gets a little frustrating because as you focus on the populated areas, we have done a pretty good job over the past couple of years of pushing the insurgents' activities away from the populated areas and protecting them. But they still gather in ungoverned spaces, and sometimes it's difficult to convince them that they should probably join the legitimate government rather than becoming an outside interference with what we're trying to accomplish here. So space and numbers of troops is a pretty big challenge.
I can well imagine. And, you know, we're looking forward to President Obama's press conference tonight where he's going to talk about a drawdown in Afghanistan. So let's wait and see what happens there. But, sir, with every accomplishment, there's always disappointments. Can I ask you, sir, what has been your biggest disappointment in your assignment?
As we work with the governments in Helmand Province, particularly the district governors, which would in many ways would kind of equate to borough presidents, I would guess, back in Brooklyn and New York, what we find is that many of these folks choose to take those positions because it helps them out. It's financially rewarding. And there's a certain level of corruption that, despite all our best efforts, it's difficult sometimes to convince them that to find the right people that are willing to be good leaders and set the right kind of example. Fighting the corruption is a big one. I will add one other, and that is, you know, that the poppy farming and the drug business is just huge. I have tried very hard to go after the money that funds the Taliban. And they get a lot of that money from selling opium and, you know, bringing it across the borders. And we interdict a lot. You know, for example, in the past couple of months, we've interdicted over 30,000 tons of opium. And the reality is that's still less than 5% of the total amount of opium is being produced here.
Wow, that's incredible.
And so it's just so much that it's disappointing when we work so hard to get it.
Sir, do you have any advice to young Americans who might be interested in joining the Marine Corps?
Well, absolutely. I think one of the best groups of people you ever want to be around are these Marines that somehow are able to, you know, turn a year assignment over here in Afghanistan into a rewarding experience where they work day in and day out with guys who are willing to do what it takes to get the job done. There's a certain camaraderie, there's a certain bond that never leaves them. And I know, you know, as a veteran, that there are people that you serve with and in some difficult times where, you know, the real true character of a person comes out. And when you find that genuine kind of character in many of the Marines that you serve with, you say, you know, I like being around them. And, you know, I've been around them now for almost 35 years, and I like it. And I don't know what I'll do when I have to leave. But, yes, if you want to meet some of the finest people in the world, join the Marine Corps and you'll see them.
I can attest to that because, as you know, I'm a former Marine officer myself, and I served with the 3rd Marine Division in Vietnam from 1968 to 1969, and I was in the Marine Corps from 1967 to 71, and I will always be proud of the Marines I serve with, but I interact with the young Marines today, and I am just amazed at their motivation, their esprit de corps, their professionalism. I do some volunteer work for an organization called Veterans Across America here in New York, and we have a Marine reservist who is helping out, and he did 2.5 years active duty. And all he wants to do now, all he wants, is to get back on active duty. And it's just amazing. So, yes, sir, I can certainly attest to that. One other thing, too, you know, the American military, besides being the finest fighting force the world has ever known, is also the finest institution for human development the world has ever known. And the Marine Corps certainly fits into that mold. And a young man or young woman can go in and they can go as far as their skills and their abilities can take them. Then there's no limitation. And I don't think the military really gets credit for that aspect of what they do. So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think that the military, and of course I'm kind of biased towards the Marine Corps, having been a Marine, or I am a former Marine, Yeah, it is a great career. It's a great experience, and it can only develop you as a human being. So I certainly agree with you. Sir, next question. I think we've kind of already answered it, but let me ask it anyway. Why did you join?
Well, there is a certain degree of example that my father said. He was a Marine, and my uncle's a Marine, and so I kind of watched some of those people, and I said, that may be a good organization to get a couple of years' experience. I did not think that I would be still here in the Marine Corps 35 years later, but I did want to get in there and just see what it was all about. So that was it, I think. Been a fast trip ever since.
It sure has, 35 years. General, when did you know that you were going to make the Marine Corps your career? At what point did you decide that was going to be the direction you were going to take?
While I was actually serving in MCRD San Diego, you know that these guys that serve as drill instructors are just an incredible breed apart. I think I was just so impressed by the quality of those staff NCOs and NCOs that were serving as drill instructors. I decided I'd like to hang around with these guys for a little longer. So I made the decision to join the regular Marine Corps on active duty at the time. So that was it. And then I said, okay, I'll do 20.
And then 20 became 25.
Well, experiences after that just kind of kept it going. Between spent a little time in Panama during Just Cause, and that was a interesting experience. And then of course Desert Storm, it just kept rolling. And as you know now, the past 10-11 years has just been nonstop. So yeah, I just don't feel like I can leave right now. I got to wait for peace to break out before I can take off and leave.
It's amazing. You talk about Panama, and you talk about Kosovo, Iraq, Afghanistan, all the places you've been, but you never got frequent flyer miles for that.
No, I didn't get frequent flyer miles, but I probably should have.
Yeah, you probably should have. Sir, let me ask you, as a New Yorker, what do you miss most about New York City?
Well, I saw that question. I was looking forward to answering that one, but I honest to goodness, it's probably Gino's Italian food back in Brooklyn.
Wow! The
pizza, the calamari. I grew up in an Italian neighborhood, and so I'm fixated on Italian food, and I really can't eat any good Italian food out here in Afghanistan. So I have to wait until I get home.
Whereabouts in Brooklyn were you born, sir?
I was born, 7th Avenue and 49th Street, and then we moved from there, kind of Park Slope area, to Bay Ridge.
Okay.
And then I grew up in Bay Ridge.
So you really are a true brew Brooklyner, that's for sure. Sir,
9/11. I hit school in every borough, grammar school in Brooklyn, high school in Manhattan, and college in the Bronx. I avoided the Queens for somehow. I don't understand.
Well, that's where I went. I graduated from St. John's University back in 1967. You talk about that, but the education facilities in New York, I mean, private and public, are just outstanding. Sir, a little bit of a change of topic.
Well, I certainly.
9/11. Where were you on 9/11 2001?
The Camp Pendleton, actually, on the rifle range with a recruit training company, teaching them how to shoot. And one of my range coaches came out and said, "Sir, you got to see this." And we'll never forget that that morning, actually, was unbelievable. And, of course, having all my relatives back here in Brooklyn, I immediately started making phone calls, making sure that everybody was safe and sound.
And hopefully they were.
They were.
But, so you were training young Marines in the rifle range to fire their weapons that day. I'm sure after you saw the images on the TV screen, you probably went back and did that job with a little bit more intensity, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think originally watching that, it was sort of, I wasn't sure exactly what that meant, but having experienced terrorists, not personally experienced it, but knowing about the Beirut bombing and the travesty that created and, sort of one of the first terrorist activities that we weren't going to tolerate another one.
I was actually working in Brooklyn 9/11, and I stood on the roof of my office building, and I watched the Twin Towers burn. And then I went down into my office and I heard screaming, yelling, and I went back up again, and one of the Twin Towers had collapsed. So I was in New York during that period of time, and those are times that will forever be seared in my memory. But, you know, we've made a huge amount of progress since then. I think America is safer today than it's ever been, thanks to the efforts of you and our men and women in uniform. But let me ask you a question. Has the death of bin Laden made a difference in your area of responsibility?
You know, the death of bin Laden has definitely been a motivating factor in why we do what we do over here. The fact is that, and we deal with this all the time, there's an awful lot of insurgent activity that goes back and forth across the Pakistani border. You know, for political reasons, my conventional forces don't pursue across the border, yet I have to deal with about 350 miles of Pakistani border and about 180 miles of Iranian border. And so, you know, there's a lot of drugs moving across the borders and facilitation of weapons and IEDs and those kinds of things coming back across the borders into Afghanistan, which obviously then we have to, you know, we deal with. I would love to be able to shut down these borders, but it's never going to happen. For me, what this event created across those borders was a little bit of a boogeyman theory. Hey, you guys think you might be safe over there, but look at what happened to bin Laden. I don't think you're safe. And it's had an impact. From a psychological perspective, it's really sort of helped us in some degree.
Sir, the Afghan soldier, I'm sure you have worked or do work very closely with the Afghan soldier. Can you describe the typical Afghan soldier for our listening audience?
You know, the typical Afghan soldier is he's a little different than the Iraqi. And that, you know, the Afghan soldiers live hard. The poverty level is extremely low. So they're used to hard living, but they're good with their weapons. And they turn out to be soldiers that are willing to operate in the heat and in a tough environment and get the job done. The big challenge for us is literacy. Literacy is, creating a lot of challenges for us as we try to bring them along in, simple things like map reading, driving a truck, reading a manual on how to fix it. So those things that can cause us some challenges, and we're trying to, as we train them, also increase their level of literacy. But you know, we can only go so far, and really, the government and the countries needs to take on this literacy challenge and education challenge, and that's what's going to make the even better Afghan soldier.
Well, I'm sure in the 10 years that the war's been going on and American forces have been there, I mean, I'm sure they made a huge amount of progress. But as you said, sir, there's still a lot of work to be done. Let me ask you about our men and women in uniform, our Marines in particular. How's morale?
I can only say that when I visit some of my guys that are wounded or injured or recovering from some injury, as you mentioned with a friend of yours, that you know, all they want to do is get back to their unit and do their job. There is very little fear on their part. There is nothing like, well, I'm hurt, I want to go home. It's, hey, I want to get better, I want to get back to my buddies. We've got a job to get doing, I want to get the job done. I don't want to leave here without finishing my time, doing my part. And I find that almost across the board. It's just, you know, when you go to visit a guy who's wounded and, you know, you're feeling kind of bad and you walk out of there pumped up and motivated because you just see this guy who's said, hey, I'm better, sir. My left hand is bandaged, but I can still shoot with my right. You know, that's the kind of guys we have. So morale is high.
That's amazing. And I couldn't agree with you more because, as I said, General, I've met and interact with a number of Marines who are veterans of the Iraq-Afghanistan war. And, their behavior is exactly as you said. Let me ask you, I was down at Walter Reed last February, went to visit our wounded warriors down there, and met a number of Marines from 2nd Battalion, 3rd Marines, who had been operating in, I guess, Sangjin province, if that's the correct pronunciation. And I was just humbled. I was just so proud of their reactions, because they're exactly as you say. The only thing they wanted to do was get back to Afghanistan and be with their fellow Marines. So while we're on that subject, sir, do you have a few words for our wounded warriors, our men and women at Walter Reed and Bethesda?
Well, number one is, their primary job is to get well. And sometimes, they try to rush it because they want to get back to their buddies. You know, we have guys now that are serving with prosthetic legs and arms, and, they're out here doing their job. You know, it's never completely over. Some of these injuries guys can bounce back from. But I just have to say that, there's also a large community of organizations that are out there that are willing to help those veterans to get back on their feet and, live a productive life. I think, they just need to continue to work hard, but get better first and then think about, their future with the Marine Corps or other things that they want to do.
So that's a good point you mentioned, too, because, you said there are actually Marines, I'm sure soldiers and other branches, in Afghanistan today who have prosthetic devices, who were wounded and are back on active duty. And I think the military and the Marine Corps in particular, because that's the branch I'm closest to, is doing an amazing job of bringing Marines back and finding productive work for them. I know in my day in Vietnam, that was not the case. And I think it's just a wonderful thing that's happening.
It really is. And there's so many good people out there that are willing to support the injured veterans these days. So many charities, and it's just the outpouring is very rewarding. It's good. It's a totally different environment, I think, now 40 years later.
Oh, it is. Sir, this next question is sensitive and probably classified, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Are you a Yankee or a Mets fan, Giants or Jets?
Well, I mean, I'm having a tough time out here because they get too many Red Sox fans, and my Yankees got swept twice, and I'm having to fend off all these loudmouth Boston Red Sox fans. But I'm a Yankees Giants aficionado. I'm hoping the Yankees come through and take care of the Red Sox sometime this season, but I'm confident the Giants will be on in the hunt.
All right, so you're a Giant. So you're a Yankees and a Giants fan. All right, that's very good. So, the Brooklyn Dodgers were long gone, so you couldn't very well be a fan of those. Sir, the next time you get to Brooklyn, and you have talked about this, but what do you want to eat first? You want to go to Gino's Italian Food?
Definitely going to get my... It depends upon the time of the day, but, I got to get the bagels on 86th Street in Brooklyn, and, I got to get a couple of slices of pizza. That's usually my first. And then, the good sit-down dinner with Gino's after that.
I'd send you some food over
usually,
there. But...
usually I wipe out the bagel shop. I order about 6 dozen bagels. The guy tells me I should call first.
Well, you probably should. You wipe out the bagel shop, but what a compliment to him. So, sir, anything else you want to say to the listening audience, the citizens of New York City?
I just want to tell. I mean, I love New York. I maintain an empire state of mind over here. It's a great city to be from, and to all my family that's in New York and New York City, just pass on that I love them all, and we're taking care of business over here.
Well, sir, today is Wednesday, June 29th, and next Monday is the 4th of July. So, I just want to say in closing the show that to all our magnificent men and women who wear the uniform of the Armed Forces of the United States that make up the finest fighting force the world has ever known, thank you for your service. May God bless and protect you. We salute you. And we look forward to the day when you step off that aircraft and onto American soil. And we can say, welcome home. Job well done. General Tulin, sir, before we sign off, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Hoorah. Semper Fi.
Hoorah, Semper Fi. General Tulin, thank you, and thank you to the Marines, to the 2nd Marine Division. And this is Don Busney signing off for the Veterans Corner. Have a happy and safe 4th of July. Thank you. And to all the brave men and women who wear the uniform of the Armed Forces of the United States. And all you veterans out there who have worn the uniform so proudly, This is for you.
Veterans Corner is a production of WSIA Staten Island 88.9 FM in collaboration with the College of Staten Island Student Veterans Center and the Division of Student Affairs. Production assistance by Stevie Rich and Brian XO. The opinions expressed in this program are those of the presenters and not necessarily those of WSIA Staten Island or the College of Staten Island. To contact the Veterans Corner team, send an email to gm@wsia.fm. For more information about the CSI Student Veteran Center, visit www.csi.cuny.edu/veterans. Thank you for listening. Tune in again next week.
WSIA Staten Island, 88.9 FM.